Please be seated.
Good morning. It is good to, I would say, see all these smiling faces, but I know from the exercise we just did that every one of y'all are smiling right now, right? It is good to be together as we continue to deal with unusual circumstances. Sometimes life throws us curveballs unexpectedly, and we'll be talking a little bit about that today as a part of this lesson. It's nice to know that when that happens, that God is with us, and that as we sometimes sing in that song, we can still sing and be happy. That doesn't mean we're happy with everything that happens. That doesn't mean that we don't struggle or have difficulties, but it does mean we can face life with the assurance that Jesus is walking with us. And that is true for those who are gathered here this morning in this assembly. That is true for those of you who have joined us online, and we thank you for joining us this morning, whether you're a member at Northeast, which many of you are joining us online. We have others who are guests who maybe aren't very familiar with the Northeast Church. So this is the way we have to greet you right now, and we are happy to do that, whether in person or virtually online. I want to start this morning by asking you a question. I'm going to have you raise your hands related to this question. I want you to think back to your high school days. And I want you to think back as to what you thought you would be doing vocationally, work-wise, in high school. All right, just think about that just a minute. Now, I'm going to ask you to raise your hands. I can't see those of you who are online, but you may just do this at home. How many of you are doing right now what you thought you'd be doing when you were in high school? Raise your hand. Raise your hand high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh, that's not a bad percentage. For those of you who are viewing online, we have 10 people in here this morning. So that's 90%. Just kidding, we don't. But that's about what I expected. Way more of you did not raise your hand. So you ended up doing something vocationally or doing something in your life that you were not planning on doing. As you look at the screen, those of you who are here, and perhaps it's being shown online, that could have been me. That could have been me right there. You know what that person is doing? That person is a chemical engineer, and I could have been one. In fact, when I was in high school and I didn't know what in the world I was going to do with my life, had no idea, I went to the school guidance counselor and talked with her a little while, and she said, well, what do you have a passion for? What do you have an interest in? I said, no. I had an interest in certain things. I had an interest in weather and other things, but I just really did not know what I was going to do with my life. And she said, well, let's take a look at your grades and your transcript, and you do well in math and science, and maybe if you go into some scientific career, engineering's hot right now, especially chemical engineers. Why don't you go to Auburn University? They have a great co-op program, and you can go to Auburn and be a chemical engineer. And I said, okay, that's what I'll do. So that's what I did. No, I didn't become a chemical engineer. And I don't know if I would have made a good one or not, but I know that when I did go to Auburn and went there for a quarter, I knew that's not what I wanted to do, not because the schoolwork at that point was too hard or difficult. My heart just wasn't in it. Many of us don't know. You may be right now in a position at work, maybe in your 40s or your 50s, and you're having questions right now about what you're going to do the next 10 years or the next 15 years. You may be considering a change in your career or moving to a different location. Maybe you're still trying to find that out. And so in this series, we've been looking at work. We've been looking at the value of work. We've been looking at how we can take a whole new look at this whole concept of vocation and work, even with all its trials and difficulties. And you remember when I asked you in that survey before we began this series, how many of you are satisfied in your work? How many of you are maybe so-so or not satisfied? 66% of you say you're pretty satisfied in the work that you do. But that means that about a third of you are having some issues related to satisfaction with work. And it was my hope as we began this series, whether we're in that 66% or whether we are in that 33%, that we can get a whole new view, a whole new angle, and pump some vitality and meaning and some hopefulness, whatever our circumstance is right now, vocationally. And that's important because we spend so much of our lives working. Now, I want to mention a disclaimer right here, right off the bat. I want to thank that man sitting right over there. Those of you here can see him, Keith Reed. He's right there. He came up to me last week, and he said, "Grady, I just want to let you know your numbers are off." And so I don't know how many of you were impressed with my guidance counselor in school said I was really good at math. And so I couldn't do a simple math problem to figure out how many hours the average person works at their vocation in their lifetime. And I came up with a number that was like 750,000 hours. And I don't know if Keith was the only one who figured, no, okay, some of the rest of you figure that. He said, "Grady, I don't know how you're doing your math, but you're off by maybe 500,000 with your numbers." So listen, whether it's 200,000 or whether it's 750,000, whatever the number is, we spend a lot of time working. In fact, in our working years, we may very well spend more time on the job than sleeping. That's why it's important. But it's important and it's good as we review a little bit about what we've talked about, because that's what we've been created to do. We've been created to work. And so God, from the very beginning, invites us into work. He invites us in to the work of creation and the work of stewardship in the work that he does. There's a quote from an article that I read a couple of weeks ago, and it is so good. Now listen to what it says here. It says, "God prefers to offer us grain and invites us to buy a field and plant the seed. He prefers that we till the soil while he sends the rain. He prefers that we harvest the crop while he sends the sunshine." Why? Because he would rather us become partners with him. Think of your work that way. Partners with him in creation. That's an amazing thought, isn't it? And so whether it's us driving the truck, or whether it's us working in the health industry, or whether it's us working to train and lead and teach our children at home, whatever that is, God invites us into that which is a part of his innate nature. God creates. God works. We are created in his image, and therefore we are called into that work that is godlike. That really is a profound thought. And I think many of us don't think of an angle like that when we think about the work that we do. We have seen that work is valuable because work ultimately is about people. Everything that we do ultimately is about blessing others, is about providing for others, it's about doing good for others, it's about providing all those services that bless life and bless others, whether we're getting paid for it or not. When I work and engage in work, in good work, nothing inherently sinful, I am involving myself in the powerful concept of what it means to be a part of the grace, the common grace that God is extending to this world. And it's important also because ultimately work is about people. We're in the people business. Everything that we do, even if you're making a widget, does something for somebody else. We're in the people business. And we also remember from last week that we need to remember that our work space is God's place. We're the temple of the Holy Spirit. God lives and abides in us through His Spirit. Jesus is with us. So when we walk into that workspace, God is going with us. He is with us. He's already there. But He's working through us in a special way. But one thing I haven't addressed yet in this short series is, you know, how do I find my work groove? Some of us are satisfied. Some of us are not satisfied. Some of us are going along pretty smoothly, and others of us are not, and the rest of us are maybe somewhere in between. How do I discover my vocational calling? How do I decide whether to be a chemical engineer or be a minister at a local church? That's not always easy to figure out. What does God want from me? What is His will in this case, in the work that I do that is so, so important? I want to give you a couple of things that will help you, whatever stage you're in, whether you're working at home or whether you're staying at home with your kids and working it that way, or whether you're on the job working part-time looking for work. I think, first of all, we need to remember that we are gifted for our work. And that is the reason, Rob, I asked you to read this passage from Exodus 31 this morning. I did not do it just to toss out a passage that has some of these strange-sounding names, as strange as they sound. Bezalel and Oholiab, they were two men who are mentioned specifically by God when Moses had come down from the mountain and received the law about all those things that were so very important in the life of the children of Israel. He says in that context, as he is talking about all these laws and all these things to be done and how to live and how it's to be done, that there were people who had special gifts and special talents that God called to a specific work. And so, if you were to read on the next few verses here, you would see that these men and others like them were to fashion the implements and the items that were a part of the tabernacle worship, from the garments to what was in the Holy of Holies. Those things had to be made. They had to be created through work. And so God says, I have given skill to all the craftsmen to make everything. And then right before that, He says, I have filled Bezalel with the Spirit of God and with skill and ability and knowledge and all kinds of crafts to make everything artistic and designs for work in gold. And then He goes on. Do you think of your work in that way? Is this only something that applied to these men in this work, in this particular task? Or do you look, first of all, when you are looking to find your vocational sweet spot, that God has gifted you innately and then in special ways, if you are a Christian, to do the things that He has called you to do, not just in, quote, church work, but in all work, which I mentioned in the first lesson, is church work. Okay? Got to get away from this dualism that separates the spiritual and the holy from the secular, because God calls us to make that which is whatever we're involved in our place in the world, that we bring Christ with us, that we make it holy, and we live holy. And in that way, we're lifting through Jesus our work to a different level. That's why you remember Paul could say to servants and slaves, ultimately, what you're doing, the way you work, the way you live your life, you're living it for God. And you're doing your work for Jesus. But once again, have you ever thought about this idea that God is blessing you in all different ways through His Spirit, through innate talents and gifts, and the exercise of those to do your work? That's a powerful thought. Do these words just apply to Bezalel, or can it apply to you? When we think about how the Holy Spirit worked in the life of the Apostle Paul, for instance, we typically think, well, he's working in the life of the Apostle Paul, and what he's doing in the life of the Apostle Paul is to help him teach and preach and write inspired things to teach the church, and we benefit from that right now today in being able to read words that are inspired, but was that it? Did the Spirit and God working in the life of Paul the Apostle as he made tents, for instance, is there any connection at all? It wasn't the same thing. But I believe that we're still empowered, not only gifted, but we're empowered by God working within us to do these things. So I believe that when he was making tents, it wasn't just some secular activity that didn't have any inherent value in its own, just so he could do something spiritual. There was God working in him as he made those tents so that people could be blessed and warmed on cold nights as they traveled, or whatever the case might be. Now here's, once again, where the rub comes. The rub comes, I think, in answering the question, well, how do I discover what God is calling me to do? That's not always clear, is it? It'd be nice, wouldn't it be nice if in all of our lives, if we're seeking, hey, what direction do I go? What do I do? How do I work? Wouldn't it be nice to just get a letter in the mail that's a lot like this statement made in Exodus 31 to these men about the works that they were doing on the crafts? And God says, look, I put my Spirit in you. I'm going to empower you to do that, 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 that. Okay, there it is. I know what I'm doing. It's not always clear to figure that out. And so you can take assessment tests, and you can do job evaluations, and you can still come up empty in terms of finding something you feel like this is really what God wants you to do. I think it's important that we know ourselves. I think it's important that we know that God has a plan for our lives. I don't believe, for example, when David says in Psalm 139, when he's talking about his life, he says, my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. God had a plan. God had a plan for David. Now, it was up to David to do the searching and the seeking and have the openness to find out how that applied specifically in working out God's plan in his life. But God did have a plan and a work for him. And I believe he has the same for us. And that includes what we're doing vocationally. So we need to know ourselves. We need to know our personalities. Automatically, we know things that work and don't work in terms of who we are personality-wise. If I was an introvert, I would not want to work a job where I'm constantly around people all day. Large crowds, lots of people. I know some who are, and they still do okay in their work, but I tell you what, when they come home exhausted. But if you're an extrovert and you're around a lot of people, you feed off that, you get energy from that, and so there are certain jobs that are more fitting for an introvert or an extrovert. In the same way, I think about those people, for instance, who work in a nursing home, maybe a nurse's assistant. And that's tough work. That is tough, tough work. And I look at my own life, my own skills, my own personality, my own innate spiritual gifts. And I've told you before, every time I take one of those gift inventories, my level of mercy giftedness is way, way down here. It doesn't mean I'm cold and hard and mean necessarily, but it just means to be able to be in that caregiving, intimate, difficult situation where day in and day out you're serving people in their needs, sometimes in difficult and dirty situations. I believe you have to be gifted in order to do that and find the kind of satisfaction that God may want you to have in that work. So prayer makes a difference as well. Getting guidance and counsel from others. The Bible says he who listens to others or gets counsel from others is wise. So my guidance counselor in high school, turns out she was wrong, but it turns out that a very good friend and an important minister in my life at a key juncture in my life encouraged me to consider going into full-time church work. That was good advice. That I say that, by the way, with the caveat that we're all involved in full-time church work, okay? None of this dualism. I think of the opportunity, for instance, for many of you who have gone through retirement, or maybe you're getting ready to retire. That gives you a whole new opportunity to think again about how I am going to fill a role vocationally in what I do. And there are all kinds of opportunities that will come with that. But those kinds of things have to be prayed about. You have to think about them. Even when you're, quote, retiring, most of us are not quitting work altogether. We're just doing a different kind of work. But it gives you opportunities to expand things. Now, we make these plans and we seek God's will, but you and I know that we're going to hit unexpected roadblocks along the way, that something hits us out of left field. I know, if you're a teenager, like I was at one time, when that time comes to get a job, you just want to get a job, right? You just want to get a job somewhere. You just want to make some money. And so maybe you're thinking about it a little bit differently. But once we kind of move forward in what we do vocationally, we're going to find out that there are challenges and detours and unexpected roadblocks that we were not counting on, right? Some people have gotten surprises this week. They weren't expecting it. Some of you have had to make decisions about making adjustments vocationally because you are now in a position where you have to care for a parent. I think of one lady here at Northeast right now, a retired couple. She is now having to think about and make adjustments because of a husband who had a stroke, and she's looking at work and what God is calling her to do in a very different way right now than 5 or 6 months ago. It's not always good. It's not always easy. Sometimes it's hard. But I believe, work-wise, that Romans 8:28 applies to our work situation every bit as much as any other situation in life. And that is that God causes all things to work together for the good, to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. Doesn't mean all those things are good. Doesn't mean we like them. But sometimes those unexpected things will cause us to make an adjustment that isn't necessarily always bad. We may think we want to do something, we have an idea in mind, and we are so dead set sure that this is what I want to do, this is the job I want, or this is the career path I want to take, and over again, we're just hitting roadblock after roadblock after roadblock, and it's not happening. And so maybe sometimes if you have that attitude, maybe you're like that young man who is totally convinced that there was a certain young lady that God had made clear to him and revealed to him that God wanted her to be his wife. So he finally got up the nerve one day to approach her, since he felt like this was God's leading and God's direction. And he said, I want to tell you something. God is making it very clear to me right now and over the last few weeks that God wants you to be my wife. To which she said, well, that's nice to know. God has not told me that yet. And if he does, you will be the first to know. Are we sometimes like that guy who's convinced that this is the right thing? Maybe it's not the right thing. Maybe sometimes we have to settle, maybe, for a little bit less perfect fit. And maybe that's God's will for the time. Maybe for a period of time, the only option is the best option for now. Here's another good thing when we're talking about finding our vocational groove. Wherever we are and wherever we land, this is an exciting thought. We are still shaped by our work. Now, I've been talking a lot over the last couple of weeks about how we shape our work. But this is a point that we should not miss, and that is that our work and the circumstances of work shape us. And so when the writer in Ecclesiastes talks about the struggle of work and the toil and how it's all meaningless, and you do all this work and then you leave it to somebody, maybe they're not going to be a good steward with what you left them, and it's vanity. And he has some negative things to say about work. But a couple of times in the book of Ecclesiastes, he says, yet this is a gift from God, the satisfaction that we find in our work. That's still there. Learning through the challenges and the obstacles and the opportunities are there. Work is good for all kinds of reasons. The rewards are good, even though they may not be exactly what we expected. We are being shaped by our work. We need to convey that to our children. I am a strong believer when children are young, and I'm not telling you exactly what age, they need jobs. They need to do chores. They need responsibility. They need to see and experience the benefit of doing something. I don't know if you want to attach an allowance to it or not. That's your call. Maybe you tell your kids, look, I'm not giving you allowance. You're going to do this because you're part of the family, and we give you room and board. Don't do that. But you know, we had allowance with our kids, and we had a chart on our refrigerator, and we had jobs and tasks, and they kept up with that. That's important to do, because in that process, they learn about this whole benefit, and it shapes them. I remember the first, what I consider my big job, and it was a job my dad gave me. And so we had a lawnmower. My brother and I took turns cutting the grass. My brother was not real good at it. He didn't like it. Dad saw I had a passion for doing that. So he said, I'll make a deal with you. You keep our yard trimmed and mowed and spotless and clean up all the grass and do the trimming, and I will let you use the lawnmower to mow other yards in our neighborhood. And as time went on, I tell you, I had a thriving business. It wasn't always easy. There were times that my friends wanted to do things, and I couldn't do them because I had to cut grass. But I had to learn that, didn't I? It's part of life. And the rewards. Oh, the rewards. David Blue and I would go down to Pizza Inn. I may have told you this story before. And we would show up at Pizza Inn at 11 o'clock for the buffet, and we would stay till 2 o'clock. That's not a preacher story. And we were teenagers, we had great appetites, we would eat and then we'd get stuffed and then we'd lay down in the booths there for a while and then we'd go back for a second round. And it's like, it wasn't right. I'm not recommending that. That's gluttony, even if you're a teenager. But you're being shaped. You're being shaped. And here's my last point this morning. And this does really tie in to a lot of the things I've talked about. In finding your vocational sweet spot, your groove, don't allow the what's next to cause you to miss the what's now. It's not just all about getting experience or stepping up the ladder or getting a different job or just about doing this so I get experience so I can get a better job, although that's fine and good. It's about me understanding that if I am so focused on what's next and I obsess about what's next, I miss the what's now. And I can't think of a better example in the Bible than Joseph himself, who, if you read about his story in Genesis 37 through almost the end of the book, you find out that he was not in the best of ideal work circumstances. His brothers, they sold him into slavery. He winds up in Egypt, hired, well, a slave, a servant to his master Potiphar. And yet, what does he do? He works. He does his job. He's responsible. He works with integrity. His wife makes advances at him. He does the right thing. He winds up in prison. In prison, what does he do? He does the right thing. He works. He uses the gifts that God gives him in the now. And it says throughout that story that God was with him and blessed him. But that was coupled with this trust that Joseph had in God in just doing the right thing right now. And not getting too preoccupied with where how this thing all ends. And the story ends well, for those of you who don't know about it, but most of you do. 20 years later, he meets up with his brothers. God in his providence has led him to a position to help them, to help his family, to help a future nation. He hung in there and just did the right thing right now, where he was, whether it was in prison, difficult circumstances. And he could look back and say to his brothers, listen, I'm here not just because y'all sold me into slavery. You meant it for harm, but God meant it for good. But he would not have gotten to that place had he not focused on what's now, versus being preoccupied with what happened in the past or what's coming in the future. So it's okay to think about that future job. It's okay to think about a job as a stepping stone. It's okay if you're in a job right now and you're not happy with that job or you have a bad boss. You can still do the right thing right now, and God can still teach you things. If you're working at McDonald's as a teenager, I know you're probably not going to spend your whole life doing the same thing at that fast food place, but there are things that you can focus on as a teenager right now, and that's going to help you in the future. Let's give our best right now. So we find our vocational groove in a lot of ways. We understand we are gifted. We do our best to discover that path that God is calling us to. We remember as well that the now is important in that process, and we understand we are being shaped by our work. Not just shaping our work, we're being shaped by our work. You want me to tell you about the best job security as I close? Anybody know? Anybody want to take a guess? Any of you online? What's the best job security? That's second. Listen, The best job security is a relationship with the Lord. That's the ultimate job security. And that's true whether I'm living the dreams with a dream job or whether I have a bad job and I'm looking for another. In Jesus, I still have an opportunity right now in whatever I'm doing. I still have the same, we also have the same job description there. That's where it's the same. We reflect Jesus. We reflect Christ. And there can be nothing better than that. It's an awesome responsibility, but He equips us for the task. So hang in there. If you're in that 33%, don't give up. Try to look at your work differently. God's going to take care of things. You just keep focusing on these things that are going to make that work not the 9-to-5 drudgery. I want to talk to you more at some time if you're interested in just talking about what it means to be a Christian, what it means to follow Jesus. I am quite sure that there are people who are listening right now, maybe in this group assembled here, you're watching online. You say, I want to find out more about that. I want to understand more about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. We are eager to talk to you about that. And so just as a couple of weeks ago, we had the blessing and privilege of being able to baptize a young lady into Christ. We are eager to do that anytime if you believe in Jesus and or you just want to study more. But in the meantime, let us know. Thank you for joining us, those of you who are online, and thank you for being here this morning as we worship God together. Let's redeem our work.